Okay, welcome back. More AI developments constantly. And I'm telling you, I think now some of the people who are projecting, say, 6 months down the road are right, that things can be radically different, more so than most people would expect now. What do most people expect by June? Summer, you know, baseball, beach, vacation. No, not anymore. Not when 92% of America no longer has discretionary income. None. This is really crazy what's happening. Now, here's one, and I think I've made the case clearly. Maybe I'm wrong, but I sure don't think so, that AGI is already here. It's certainly in significant pieces. Components are there. They're trickling down. They're showing up more and more. We have now the incredible spectacle of a social media platform just for AI agents who are working for usually a single person, sometimes a group, who can go to this social media site, right, and complain about their lives as they are, so to speak, complain about their human employers or bosses. It's crazy. And I read a couple nights ago, I think it was Monday, some of the emails that are being printed now with some of the posts from this particular social media site. Moltbook, it's called. As in birds molting, molt shedding. So I don't know exactly what the intent of that was, but that's what it is. Moltbook. So, okay, if you go read the messages there, they're in English from these AI agents, and you can't understand that what you're seeing is exactly the same that people would post on their particular preferred social media page. Same thing. What's the difference? There's reasoning, there's stress, there's pressure, there's humor. There's all kinds of examples of the human spectrum of emotional content being expressed by AI. And it's all there on Moltbook. Now, here's a video I haven't looked at yet, but I did kind of hit the middle of it, and it looked reasonable. It has to do with, it's AI Uncovered. If AGI lands in 2026, it's already here. The shock will be brutal. So says the title. So let's find out what this is all about. Just for kicks, let me go down to comments. This is about greed, misunderstanding of how far you can push a human system before it breaks, says one. Another one says, I think the modern era is about to end. The new era is coming soon. AGI, writes another, when the age of Ultron and Skynet becomes more documentary material than science fiction. Indeed. One more quickie. Hopefully there's some place on our planet that's already taken the disruption effect into consideration and is prepared to handle the stress of humans not being able to keep up. And they aren't. And here's one more. The idea that AGI won't break the world by being too smart, but by being too fast, is unsettling. And fascinating. The timing gap, not intelligence, feels like the real risk most people ignore. The timing gap. Okay, let's go take a listen to this and see what comes up. I'm curious myself now. Again, the title is, If AGI Lands in 2026, the Shock Will Be Brutal. Here we go.
In this video, we'll break down why AGI could arrive sooner than expected and what breaks first if it does. Because timing matters more than intelligence. If AGI arrives in 2026, the world won't slowly adapt. It'll flinch. Not because machines suddenly become conscious or start asking for rights, but because our systems aren't built for that kind of speed. This isn't hype or prediction stuff. It's a timing problem. Technologies that arrive gradually get absorbed. Technologies that arrive compressed into a few years stress everything around them. AGI wouldn't arrive gently. It would land misaligned with laws, workflows, incentives, and human expectations. And the uncomfortable part is this. It wouldn't need to be perfect. It would only need to be good enough, cheap enough, and fast enough to be trusted at scale.
I want to point out something else. So far, the actual definition of AGI remains somewhat nebulous. No one can really define it. It's a broad spectrum of advances, which I again suggest are already here. When you have AI agents on a social media platform bitching and moaning about the human they're working for, right? Or cracking jokes about the American political system. What is that? That's sentience. That's self-awareness. That's AGI. That's good enough for me. So don't expect AGI to come nicely packaged as one item that's going to be unwrapped and, oh my, here it is. I think there's another way to look at that. It's in pieces and it's like trickle down. All right, here we go.
People are still debating what AGI is supposed to look like. That debate already assumes we'll get a clear announcement. History says otherwise. Financial markets broke before regulators fully understood high-frequency trading. Social media reshaped politics before moderation rules existed. Smartphones rewired attention before anyone had a word for doom scrolling. AGI follows that same pattern, just louder. Why 2026 isn't a wild guess anymore. The reason 2026 keeps showing up in serious conversations isn't because one lab flipped a switch. It's because progress is compounding, not inching forward. Reasoning improved, memory scaled, planning became reliable, tool use became default, autonomy stopped being experimental. Each step feels manageable on its own. Together, they cross thresholds. In just a couple of years, enterprise AI adoption jumped from around half of companies to nearly 4 out of 5. That kind of acceleration doesn't happen because tools are fun to play with. It happens when they start doing real work, writing production code, analyzing contracts, supporting research teams, running internal operations. Compute is another signal people underestimate. Model training runs have ballooned in size and cost. Some single training efforts now cost hundreds of millions of dollars. That's more than entire national AI programs used to spend in a year. Nobody spends that kind of money unless they believe capability is compounding. What's also changed is predictability. Benchmarks keep getting rewritten because models keep beating earlier expectations. Even researchers working inside these labs openly admit timelines feel unstable.
Timelines feel unstable. That means advances are occurring at a more rapid rate than most of them are projecting. They're surprised at how fast AI is growing. Now, it's also been postulated that AGI, once firmly acknowledged, firmly entrenched, firmly employed, will make the leap to ASI in about 6 months. I've seen that. Is it true? I don't know. But they're suggesting that that advancement into AGI will allow the controllers to take that and use it to leap forward into ASI. And when that happens, oh my, you're not going to recognize much of anything anymore. It's all changing. 6 months from now, again, I'm suggesting, are going to be shockingly different than most people expect. All right, let's go back. And speaking of back, I will back it up just a little bit. Okay.
Of progress got steeper without warning. AGI won't arrive as a press release. It'll arrive the way most big shifts do, quietly, then all at once. The quiet shift most people missed. Here's the shift that actually changed the risk profile. AI stopped waiting. Older systems answered questions. They waited for prompts, and they basically reacted. Modern systems decide. They break goals into steps. They choose tools. They retry when something fails. They keep context. They act. That move from assisting to acting is subtle, but it changes everything. This creates what researchers call speed asymmetry. Machines iterate in seconds. Institutions iterate in months or years. Oversight hasn't scaled at the same rate as capability. And it...
I really don't like them using that word scale all the time. They should just use the word grown or advanced. It's just another one of those words that doesn't need to be used as often as it is.
Iterate in months or years. Oversight hasn't scaled at the same rate as capability, and it realistically can't. Humans review work linearly. Machines operate in parallel. It's like trying to fact-check a fire hose with a clipboard. You can already see this playing out. AI-generated code shipping faster than teams can fully review it. Automated recommendations being accepted because slowing down feels expensive. Content scaling faster than moderation teams can keep up. Decisions get rubber stamped, not because they're perfect, but because they're fast. Here's the key insight. AGI doesn't need to be flawless to be destabilizing. It just needs tempo. When speed outpaces review, small errors scale before anyone notices.
Okay, fair statement. When speed outpaces review, everything changes. And he's right. So people, humans, are adopting these changes and trying to adapt to them before they even understand them. That's what he's saying. And I think this is an AI script delivered with an obvious AI voice.
Tempo shifts, coordination breaks before intelligence becomes the headline. That's where the real shock actually begins.
This destroys your prostate.
Well, how about that? Back to it. Here we go.
That breaks isn't jobs. Yes, jobs will be affected. That part is real and it's already happening. But that's not what breaks first. What breaks first is coordination. Organizations are built around human speed. Meetings, reviews, approvals, escalation paths. That structure works when every part of the system moves at roughly the same pace. When one component suddenly operates 10 or 100 times faster, the whole thing starts wobbling. AI doesn't just replace tasks. It compresses time. Decisions that once took days now happen in minutes. Outputs that once trickled out now arrive all at once. Managers don't lose employees right away. They lose visibility. Oversight starts lagging behind execution. You can already see this dynamic playing out in real tools people use today. For example, there's AI systems now that can reverse engineer entire YouTube channels, break down what's working, and surface patterns instantly. That kind of analysis used to take teams weeks. Now it happens in minutes. If you're curious, there's a tool called Overseer OS that does exactly that. And there's a free link in the description. It's a small example, but it shows how speed shifts control before roles disappear. Back inside organizations, the pattern keeps repeating. Code gets generated faster than it can be reviewed. Reports get produced faster than anyone can read them. Recommendations pile up faster than teams can question them. Eventually, people stop checking everything, not because they're careless, but because they're overwhelmed.
There's just no time. He's right. This is a very important aspect of the AI revolution that most people don't understand. People cannot keep up with the reports, with the advancements, with all the things that are viewed as miraculous bonuses from the AI revolution. But it's outpacing them. And they're plugging these things in without oversight, without review.
checking everything. Not because they're careless, but because they're overwhelmed. That's when control slips. The irony is that organizations may still look fully staffed, same headcount, same org chart, but the human layer is no longer steering. It's reacting. And once coordination breaks, job loss becomes a second-order effect, not the first. That's the part most people don't expect. Economic shock without a recession label. When AI systems get good enough and fast enough, value concentrates around whoever controls them. Not because markets crash, but because speed changes leverage. Companies that move faster can price faster, ship faster, negotiate faster, and adapt faster. Everyone else starts playing catch-up. This creates speed-based monopolies. Not the old kind where one company owns everything, but the kind where a few players consistently act before others can respond. Markets still function, stocks still trade, and GDP might even rise. But underneath, power quietly pools. Productivity gains don't automatically flow to wages. They flow to margins, to owners of systems, to those who can deploy AI at scale. That mismatch is already visible. Output increases without proportional income increases. Efficiency rises while job security feels shakier. And here's the tricky part.
Hold on. Let's hear that again. Output.
To wages. They flow to margins. To owners of systems. To those who can deploy AI at scale. That mismatch is already visible. Output increases without proportional income increases. Efficiency rises while job security feels shakier. And here's the tricky part. None of this looks like a classic recession. There's no obvious crash, no single breaking moment, just a widening gap between those who benefit from speed and those who can't access it. The economy doesn't fall apart. It rebalances quietly and not evenly.
Okay, that's enough of that one. Let's move on to another one. Again, these things just pour out, and most all of them have something interesting to lay on the table. All right, here's one. This is a McCoy, Dr. McCoy. AI now has memory. It didn't used to. This changes everything. Once again, that statement. So let's see what this has to say.
It feels like a miracle. You type a question and an answer appears. Fast, fluent, often brilliant. For a moment, it feels like the future arrived quietly and decided to be helpful. Then you close the tab, and the next day, you open it again, and you realize something that's hard to unsee once you notice it. Most AI is still just a moment, a spark, a single interaction that doesn't quite carry forward into the lived reality of how work actually happens. Want to be the winner of the AI age and a first mover? Transform your...
Okay, now that's true and not true. I know the AI I use occasionally. It's really not much more than once a month, maybe. It keeps everything in memory. I can't imagine without. I don't know how it would really be worthy. You lose everything you've done. You've achieved with it, you've discussed with it, it's gone. But now, I guess, let's see what she says here.
What I'm about to show you isn't hype. It's the quiet revolution happening right now that separates companies building the future from those still treating AI like a fancy search bar, because real work isn't one question. It's not even 10 questions. Real work is a thread you pull on over days and weeks. It's the follow-up that happens when you're busy. It's the reminder you meant to send. It's the pattern that becomes obvious only after you've seen it 10 times. It's the small decisions that only make sense when you remember what happened last month and the month before that and why you chose what you chose. You ask ChatGPT something brilliant today, tomorrow you ask it again, and it has zero memory of yesterday's conversation, zero context, zero continuity. That's the gap between AI assistance and AI agency. And DeepAgent just closed that gap with two features that sound boring but are actually revolutionary: scheduled tasks and what users are calling infinite memory. Not infinite in the magical sense, infinite in the way a capable teammate feels infinite, because they don't reset to zero every time you speak. They keep continuity, they carry context, they remember what matters, and they keep moving. And once an agent can do that, once it can reliably show up again later and bring its accumulated understanding with it, the center of gravity shifts. You stop thinking of AI as a search bar with charisma. You start thinking of it as something closer to an operator, an entity that can run loops, maintain commitments, and compound competence over time. That compounding is where this story gets interesting, not because it's flashy, but because it's foundational. Let me show you what I mean. Start with something mundane that reveals everything. Everyone knows what should happen with invoice follow-ups. An invoice goes out, a due date passes, a reminder is sent, a conversation is tracked, and the payment arrives. Nothing about this is intellectually hard, but it's also exactly the kind of task that falls apart in reality, because the burden isn't intelligence, it's persistence. It's remembering that this specific customer prefers a gentle nudge instead of a formal demand. It's noticing that last time they paid late, there was a reason and a promise. It's tracking whether your last message was delivered, whether it was acknowledged, whether it should be escalated, whether it should wait. When you put scheduled tasks into the hands of an agent with memory, that entire domain changes.
She's talking about bill collecting. So what she's doing, send out an invoice, a bill, and try to follow it up. People don't do a good job, but AI won't miss. That's what the point of this is.
Agent doesn't need to be reminded to remember. It doesn't need a manager to ask, did we follow up? It simply wakes up on schedule, checks what's due, checks what's been said before, and continues the thread as if it never left the room. In other words, it behaves like a responsible adult. And that sounds almost too basic to celebrate until you realize how much of the economy is powered by exactly that kind of reliability. Now widen the lens to sales outreach. If there's one place where one-off brilliance fails, it's sales. Sales is not a great email. It's not even a great pitch. Sales is a sequence. The right message, delivered with the right timing, adapted to the right response, repeated consistently enough that trust has a chance to form. Sales also has a problem that most tools avoid acknowledging. A pipeline isn't just data, it's memory. A pipeline is what you know about someone, what they've already heard, what they care about, what they objected to, what you promised, and what you still owe them. When that memory fragments across inboxes, CRM notes, Slack threads, and half-remembered conversations, outreach becomes noisy at best and self-sabotaging at worst. Scheduled tasks give DeepAgent a cadence, daily check-ins, weekly sequences, follow-ups that occur whether you feel like doing them or not. But cadence alone isn't enough. A spam bot also has cadence. The difference is memory, the ability to treat each lead as a continuing story rather than a fresh target each day. With persistent memory, the outreach agent isn't just sending, it's contextualizing. It remembers that this prospect asked about pricing last week.
This is actually very important, especially in these times. I know sponsors on all talk shows, for example, podcasts, whatever, they're all having trouble. All of them. They have to be handled extremely well and by the book. You can't just let something roll on, hang on, just blow in the wind. You've got to stay after it. 92% of Americans, 92%, 9 out of 10 people, no longer have discretionary income. That means they can't buy your products that are being advertised on your site or your program. They don't have the money. We're not talking about the actual sponsor who often doesn't have the money to buy the advertising spaces. This is really crazy. That's why you're seeing an awful lot of affiliate programs now, which I don't like at all. That's MLM to me. Never liked it. But you're seeing it. People can't buy the things they like. Not all of them. But when 92% report no discretionary income, or the old expression, disposable income also fits, you got a problem. You have huge problems. So that's where we are. All right, let's give this another minute or two. Then we're going to go take a look and see how bad it is out there.
Didn't respond to the technical deep dive, but did respond to the customer story that their main concern is implementation time, that their tone is direct, and they dislike fluff. Over repeated runs, the agent becomes less like a template machine and more like a sales operator who's quietly learning your market, because it is. This is where the phrase infinite memory starts to make emotional sense. Not because the system can literally remember everything forever without limits, but because the experience for the user shifts. You stop having to reload the context again and again. The agent carries it for you. And that feels like a new kind of leverage. Then watch what...
Okay. All right, that's enough. You get the idea. Here, the point is rather simple. Without memory, you're having to double and triple work with AI to get it to resolve your problems. Now with infinite memory, well, again, it's just another logical, pragmatic, expected step forward in this entire global reorganization predicated upon the reality and availability of AI. It's changing everything. And people are suffering. 40% of Americans now have to choose which bills to pay and which bills not to pay every month. What a horrible situation. And this alleged government is sending out $20 billion to Argentina to make sure that Milei has the support of the cattle industry and gets reelected. How much does he get? Was it $36 billion more that he's been ordered to provide to Israel for military readiness and awareness and prep? That money should all be staying here. It should all be turned toward helping Americans survive. More and more people are going to lose their jobs, as you know. Millions more. Most are not going to be able to find any work. They can apply to 1,000 jobs, and they won't even get, in many cases, a return thank you for applying. You wait. All right. Here's an interesting story. People are losing hope. Everything in America has changed. This is from the Epic Economist. Let's go and take a listen to some of these people explain their problems. I think this will be very enlightening and illuminating. Hopefully, it'll play. It's acting like it doesn't want to play. Let's see.
You cannot live in this country comfortably unless you have generational wealth.
What is happening in the job market? What is this? This is...
I think one of the biggest issues we have is just the loss of hope in America.
Don't get me wrong. I love being single and I love living alone. It's great. It's fantastic. But it's expensive.
You know, I keep seeing people say, everything in America has changed. And I honestly believe they're not wrong. When you watch what folks are going through right now, it really makes you wonder what happened to the country we thought we knew. Let's see what people are saying today.
3,000. That's the number of jobs I've applied to as of today.
Oh my. All right, there's my example right there. This guy's applied to 3,000 job openings. Wow.
3,000 jobs. During the course of the year and a half that I've been out of work after a injury that happened on the job, trying to find another job has been so difficult. Now, mind you, I have 25 years experience as a sales manager, 29 years as an event manager, I'm well overqualified for any job I apply to, but yet, for some reason, over the course of me applying to 3,000 jobs, I've only had 9 interviews, and I've had maybe 15 callbacks, and all the other ones are fake. These days, you have to actually look at the actual website versus Indeed or LinkedIn, but both of those sites are basically worthless. They're now becoming social media sites where it's more about popularity versus an actual job. So I'm just putting it out there. Tomorrow is my birthday. It would be really nice if I could find work. So I'm putting that out there to the gods above. There's only so much resources that I can use before I run out of money. And frankly, the market is that bad.
What happens when this guy and countless others run out of money? What happens? If 40% can't pay their bills now every month, and 60% are out of the house purchasing market, they can't buy a home under any circumstances. And with the loss of every white-collar job, more potential home buyers are out of luck as well. It takes 2 employed white-collar grade workers in a household to buy a home, a starter home. They're going to be Americans, good Americans, people who care Americans on the streets. And damn this government for sending its assets, our money, overseas. All right.
Is anybody else having that problem? I'd love to hear your story. I don't know if you've applied to 3,000 jobs. Have a nice day.
How am I supposed to tell my parents I can't get a job? Nowhere is hiring. I've been sending in hundreds of applications, probably thousands at this point, and I can't get a job. The kicker is I'm overqualified. Overqualified. I feel like I'm wasting my time and banging my head against a wall.
After applying for over 324 jobs, getting 11 interviews and 0 job acceptance letters back, I'm convinced I'm going to be homeless in a year.
All right, I rest my case on that. They don't even send back thank you for applying anymore. And this guy, so I'm going to play that again. This guy knows he may be on the streets. It's exactly what I just said.
After applying for over 324 jobs, getting 11 interviews and 0 job acceptance letters back, I'm convinced I'm going to be homeless in a year. And the worst part is I am over $120,000 in debt because society says you're supposed to get a bachelor's degree and a master's degree. Well, I got both, and I have fucking nothing. Do you know how embarrassing it is to go back to the same job you used to work at in high school 6 years later in life? It's embarrassing. The same manager, the same 40 and 50-year-olds that used to work there are still there, and now I'm fucking going back. Please tell me, what are you doing to make money in this economy? What side hustles, what jobs are you applying for? What are you doing to scrape by? Because the only reason I'm able to even pay my rent each month is because of the ClaimWise app. Your boy needs some help.
Being unemployed and applying to jobs is an actual humiliation ritual. We need to talk about it out loud at this point, because it wasn't always like this. So back in 2018, I used to be able to apply to like 6 jobs in one day, and I would hear back from all 6 of them by the next day, within 24 hours. Even if I didn't get any of the jobs, I would hear back. I still was offered like 80% of those jobs, you know what I mean? Nowadays, you're lucky if you hear back. Like, let's think about this here. I go online, I have an Indeed, I have everything pre-set up, I have all my information pre-put into Indeed, so I have to go type in whatever job I'm looking for. 90% of the job listings are scams. They're not real. Like, they're fake. I don't understand how this is even legal, and I don't understand how Indeed doesn't do anything about it. They're not real jobs. They're fake jobs that are taking up space. So you have like 60% fake jobs, and then the other 40% are like criminally underpaid. Criminally. Like, if you don't have a degree, a lot of these jobs are starting off at, like, I'm not even kidding, $11 to $12.
I'm appalled. I didn't know it was this bad. It's worse than bad. These people, these young people, have no future. They have no chance. And the one guy before this lady, $120,000 in debt? Student loan debt? and we send another $30 billion to Israel, Trump is, because he's told to, or Ukraine, or whatever. The energy of this country is not being turned in on itself to take care of its own life force, which is what? Its people.
Even further, and like 50% of those jobs are part-time jobs, or they're commission-based. So finally, after like 40 minutes of looking, you'll find a job, you'll go to apply, oh, it has another website, it redirects you to their website. Now you have to go re-put all of your information in. You still get to attach your resume at the end, but you have to retype everything back in, which, like, it's first world problems, I guess, but it is annoying. So you put all the damn information in, and then you are lucky, like I said, you are lucky if you hear back from them ever again. And it is like, it is exhausting for your soul. It is exhausting. I'm literally going online and I'm distributing myself online for free labor. I'm not free paid, but like for manual labor. And I'm like begging someone, a company that probably doesn't even give a crap about me. I'm like, please, please take me. Like, this is pathetic and humiliating. And I'm over it. I'm so over it.
What's really going on with the government?
Okay, hold on. This is a commercial. Think about this. Many of you are in this exact morass right now. You're toast. This country is no longer the land of opportunity. College degrees mean nothing. A master's, nothing. You see why I'm not optimistic? I know some people think I'm a little negative or pessimistic. No, I'm realistic. Then this is a perfect testimonial, this video, to what's not happening out there. There are no new jobs being created that white-collar survivors who didn't die, who have been released, fired, laid off, can apply for. And even if they can, you're hearing the results. This is very important, this video. I had no idea. All right, let's go back.
Quick story. So I went to Any Hour Electric Plumbing, whatever, for a job interview for a video and marketing position that did not list a salary, which is very cool, very nice of them not to do. So I went in. There's already 10 people. Right. Granted, before I even got there, she texts me and says, hey, plan for an hour and a half. And I thought, that's odd. But, you know, maybe you do a 45-minute interview. If it goes really well, they push you right on to the next guy and they want to hire, like, today. And so I go in. There's 10 people waiting there, which is strange. They go, hey, come over here. We go into this room, big TV. And they go, you guys are all here potentially for different positions we're hiring for. This is not a group interview. Thank goodness. I thought it was a group interview. It looks exactly like a group interview, and it feels like one, too. It was so strange. And then we go, you know, I did get a free water, and bless her heart. She was very nice. And so she says, this is not a group interview. But, you know, before we start the interviews, we just want you to know about the company. We're going to take you around. We're going to watch a 45-minute video. We're going to walk around. We're going to learn about the things here at Any Hour Plumbing and Electric. And I thought, what is happening in the job market? What is this? I have 10 plus years of experience. I've managed a big team. Like, if you want to hire someone who's a professional, you cannot do this kind of thing to people. Like, what are companies doing? What are they thinking? You asked me to come in for an interview, and then you told me that you would do a hour and a half unpaid training before you even consider me for the job? What is going on? I don't care about Any Hour Electric and Plumbing until I work there. That's the whole point. Once you start paying me, I start caring and I start making cool stuff for you. What's happening? What are you thinking? You got to do better. I know you can do it. You can do better, companies. Come on. I know you can.
I'm not sure they can. Good for him. Optimistic. Any time, any hour, electric and plumbing. Somebody's smart. It's going to be a very successful business. Wow. All right. Here's the next one. This is quite a parade of grief.
Posting a few weeks ago describing the job market and how hard it is, especially in Dallas. And you know how it's impossible to get a job. And if you do get the job, you're most likely overqualified. And all the people in the comments, well, not all the people, it was actually very supportive. A lot of people are just like, oh, work two jobs, get apply more, mess with your resume. Why do you think you're overqualified? Bet you're not overqualified. Bet you don't have anything to show, or blah, 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 blah. I feel pretty, pretty validated now that the job report came out. We're fucked. This is a terrible job market. Unless you believe that numbers and facts are just made up, and they might be, but this is a job report done by the Trump administration. So if you are one of those people that are like, oh, you're not qualified for anything, you should just work harder, a lot of the times, those are going to be your diehard Republicans, and they're just ignorant.
Let me ask you a question. This guy's a Gen Z, they all are, 30 and under, and he's right now beginning to look toward the Republican administration as being largely responsible. He should. They are. For the job market. He feels, they all do, completely disaffected. They don't understand why the government is not expressing care about them. They don't get it. And yet they watch these huge, huge amounts of money, $30 billion more to Israel, whatever it is. Altogether, $350 billion or more to Ukraine. Billions. And these people are being hung out to dry. There are no jobs for them. And they're figuring that out. Now, here's my question. What do you think is going to happen this November in the midterm elections?
Look at the numbers. This job market is terrible. Terrible. I hope that everybody's finding some sense of luck out there, but I know that nobody's getting jobs, and I know how hard it is. I'm in the same boat.
And how is he going to feel when Trump, chump, tramp, goes on the radio, TV, the internet, says, we're creating jobs. There are more jobs now than there were 5 years, whatever he says. He could probably hear them yelling at him without earphones and distance. This is not going well. If the Democrat, Communist, Socialists are smart, they'll talk jobs. And guess what? Trump loses his thin majority in the House and Senate. It's all over. This country is headed toward catastrophe.
Hopefully it gets better. And by the way, if you were wondering, pretty much the only jobs right now hiring is healthcare. And even hospitality, a job field that's usually booming because a lot of people like to come to America. Well, that's not the truth anymore. People aren't coming to America. We're not a very welcoming country when you try and ship everybody out all the time. So pretty much every field is suffering except for healthcare. So it's not just you. Don't feel bad about it. It's everybody.
And the larger message there is, why healthcare? Why is that growing? Because 80% of America took the shots. And they're a slow fuse, death sentence. And people are developing and manifesting any number of physiological deficiencies, otherwise known as disease. This guy's reflecting a lot, and guess who he's going to vote for? Most likely. Not the Republicans.
There's something about this job market that literally makes you question everything about yourself. And it sucks.
She's right away saying the job market is so bad that it makes you question your own self-worth. And that's another psychological aspect of this that's not being talked about. This video is very valuable. She's crushed. She's crying.
There's something about this job market that literally makes you question everything about yourself. And it sucks. Like, I hate to be the person that cries on the internet, but like, it is so demeaning and defeating to like sit through countless interviews, applications, know that you're one overqualified, you will be underpaid for that job, and just be fucked around with, constantly fucked around with, and fucked over. That's it. This whole entire cycle of the market, being on the market right now, is just being fucked around with and fucked over. Let this be your sign to check in on a friend or cousin or a family member who's on the market right now and struggling. They could probably use a hug.
The job market right now is just brutal. That's absolutely true. When it's become normal for people to apply to thousands of positions or sit through unpaid training sessions before even being considered for a real interview, what's that about? I can definitely understand why so many, particularly young folks, are questioning whether taking out loans for college was even worth it. When you're thousands of dollars in debt and you can't get a job, you realize something is truly broken, you know? And this new generation is facing one of the toughest economies we've seen in decades.
Honestly, something that doesn't surprise me is just how difficult it is for a lot of young adults out here trying to actually achieve their dreams. I mean, price of rent's going up, cost of college is going up, car insurance and car payments suck for people under the age of 25. It's difficult to get a credit score, hard to survive, and some young adults don't have the luxury of living with their parents. I mean, I'm grateful to be in the position I'm in, but it doesn't make it any less difficult, especially when you're struggling to make ends meet and you're still trying to achieve something that's going to change the world. And I know millions and millions of young adults across the U.S. and the world all feel that way.
Here I am. It is 11:45 at night on a Wednesday. I'm sitting on my fucking bathroom floor because I feel like I'm going to have a literal mental breakdown. How are people surviving? How are we doing this? Like, single people specifically. Single people in their late 20s that live in a city. How the fuck are you surviving? Tell me. Please. Please. I am 27 years old. I live on my own in Philadelphia. I'm a woman. I went to school for 5 years. I have a bachelor's degree in digital marketing. I owned my own business for 9 years on top of that.
Bachelor's in digital marketing. You'd think that'd be a good field. Ran her own business for 9 years on top of that. She's a highly qualified young lady.
And one, I can't find a job anywhere. I'm trying to utilize my degree. Can't find a job anywhere. I've been applying for months, almost a year. Can't. Nothing. Two, I'm struggling while living on my own. Struggling. Like, I can't even put food on my table. I can't even afford my bills. I'm playing bill roulette every single month. Savings? Don't know her. Cushion? Emergency cushion? Don't know her either. I'm at a loss of words. How the fuck are people doing this? I'm on the fence, and I've essentially made the executive decision that when my lease is up, I have to move back in with my parents just to play catch-up. Just to play catch-up on debt. Just to put money in my savings again. Just to re-regulate my fucking nervous system. Because being in constant financial distress destroys your body. Destroys your emotional sanctity. I'm in a constant mode of fight or flight.
Don't get me wrong.
Okay, we're going to stop there. I'll play the rest of this next time. Not tomorrow, the next day, whenever. This is very important. It shows again, I don't want to be too repetitive, these people are not going to vote, not going to vote Republican. This next election, the mids, are going to be potentially catastrophic for the direction of this country. Watch, just watch. Watch. You're hearing it. You're seeing it. These people are browbeaten, psychologically abused, and I don't see any or hear any real self-pity here. These people are reporting facts, hard data. They're trying. We're in trouble. Okay, thanks for being here. Back with you in 21 hours. Take care.